Welcome to Regulated and Relational, the bi-monthly podcast produced by the Attachment and Trauma Network. Today, Ginger and Julie are joined by Jessica Harris, a teacher from Indiana, and they will be discussing how to build healthy teacher-parent relationships as we start the new school year. Let's join the conversation.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Regulated and Relational, our podcast produced by the Attachment and Trauma Network. I'm Julie Beam.
And I'm Ginger Healy.
And we're excited to share with you from both our personal experiences and our professional knowledge what it truly means to be attachment-focused, trauma-informed, and how we can help children impacted by early childhood trauma. Today, we're going to talk about the relationships between parents and teachers, because, you know, it's back to school time, and we're all thinking about that as parents and teachers. And we have a special guest in our studio to do that. Ginger, can you introduce everybody to Jessica?
I would be happy to introduce Jessica. Jessica Harris is a teacher in Lafayette, Indiana. In her 17 years in education, Jess previously taught in grades kindergarten through second grade, until she began the CLIMB program at Mayflower Mill Elementary. Created in collaboration with the school principal, the CLIMB program serves as an alternative to out-of-school suspensions and provides students in grades K to 5 with intensive social and emotional instruction and support while keeping them in school and on track academically. For this work, Jess was named in the top 25 candidates for Indiana Teacher of the Year in 2020. Jess has been heavily involved in Mayflower Mill's 10-year-long trauma-responsive journey and loves working with teachers and schools who are getting started in this important work. I personally have just been so lucky to get to know you, Jess, more these last couple of years through those times that you have spoken at our conference. And then I was lucky enough to get paired with you in our year-long neurosequential model of education certification program. Mm-hmm. And I just really grew to admire your work so much so that I featured you and Mayflower Mill in my book, because I couldn't find a better example. I just really believe that you are changing the educational landscape because your work is so innovative. And shout out to Shannon Cobble too, right? She's yes. Amazing. So anyway, with all of that, we just really felt like you would be the perfect guest to really bring that teacher perspective and understanding of this parent-teacher relationship that is so critical. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Ginger. Thank you, Julie, for having me.
We are so excited for this conversation. So, Julie, why don't you kind of start by explaining why we really just wanted to talk about this? And let's just start asking you, Jessica, questions and thoughts that we've been having in regard to this topic.
Neither Ginger or I were not degree educators. We were bouncing around topics, back to school topics, about what we could talk to our audience about, which is probably about split halfway between educators who listen to us and caregivers and parents who listen to us. And as we know, in the trauma-informed movement, especially around education, relationships is key. Relationships with the students, and same for any trauma-informed caregiving that we do. The building of healthy attachment and relationships with our own children is critical for their emotional health. So we were like, well, what can we talk about? And then we just started talking about the adults in the situation and their relationships with each other, and how sometimes that's a rocky road between parents and educators. And now here we are at the beginning of the school year. How can we get off on the right foot? And is it even important? So I guess that's my first question to you, Jess, is how do you see the relationships between the parents and the teachers from a trauma-informed lens? Like, what's the importance there?
Absolutely. That's a big question. It's so important. And I've always thought that relationships with parents are important. But when you add that trauma-informed lens, and I think with all of the things now we know through neuroscience, we look at our kids in a certain way when we're using neuroscience, but we know what is good for a child's brain is good for an adult's brain as well. So often we work to do this with our students, and we don't realize or think that we can intentionally do the same things with the adults, our coworkers, our, you know, our staff, and also our parents, mm-hmm. but that adults have the same needs that kids do, right? So when we're looking at developing relationships with our parents, we want them to have all of the same things we know are important for our students, which would be like safety. They require a sense of safety when they're working with us and a connection, and they're going to need their basic needs met just like our students do. And so we can look at relationships with parents a lot deeper using that trauma-informed lens, but they're just so important. I was thinking back, you know, last night when I was kind of thinking about doing this today, I was thinking back about when I was in college before I was, you know, a real teacher and I started my mm-hmm. first job, and they would prepare us that we needed to create really good relationships with our parents so that our parents would be supportive of us, or so that we would have parent involvement. And, you know, now reflecting back, I'm thinking that's really like inaccurate advice or only a piece, because mm-hmm. that's not really a true relationship. Like, I want my students' parents to want to have an invested relationship with me, but not so that I will give their child good grades. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want them to want to have a relationship with me so that they get something out of it. I want them to be invested in my classroom because they value me as a teacher and as a human. And I think that that's what we need to be coaching our new teachers through, that relationships with parents aren't so that we get something from them, but right. because, you know, the humanity of the fact that they are people that have a common interest in the same children that we have, right? We are kind of working with growing these little babies from opposite ends of the spectrum. And so we should have a really close and connected relationship with their parents.
No, that's really well said. The whole concept that you send your child to school to a stranger, really, initially. I mean, it's a little scary. I'm thinking about all the kindergarten mom and dads out there right now. They're just like, I'm sending my child off to school to somebody that they don't know. And maybe they've already gone to preschool or some other kind of care where that's happened. But building that relationship is so beneficial for the child, for the student. I mean, obviously it's good for the adults too, to have a good working relationship, but them being able to see that all of these adults have their best interest at heart, you know, it has to be so powerful for their own sense of safety and sense of self, really.
Yes. And it's very good for them to see like what a big team they have. Mm-hmm. All of these adults love them. They have such a big team, and, you know, parents need to feel like they have a team too. And I'm a parent right now, and it's really hard, you know, in our society, it's hard raising kids, and you need a support system as a mom or as a dad. So I think who better than the other person who's spending the majority of the day with your child?
Exactly. Yeah. So from your vantage point, I mean, Ginger and I both have had children in school, so we could talk from the parent vantage point, but from your vantage point as a teacher, what are the obstacles in trying to get a really healthy relationship with parents?
I think sometimes we come to the table with our own bias. You know, it might be that last year's teacher said, oh, this mom was a challenge to work with, or these parents weren't cooperative. And then so, you know, this new teacher, you know, now has that bias to expect, well, it's going to be really hard to work with these parents, or just, you know, maybe they've had bad experiences in the past. And all of these things are really based in fear. I think one of the biggest obstacles would be, you know, fear sometimes with how well, you know, a relationship can be established and maintained, especially when you have a child that might be struggling, you know. So when a child's doing really well, it's really easy for both parties to be like, wow, this is a great year. Everything's going good. We love this teacher. I love this mom. But when a child's struggling, you know, I think our human nature is we got to place the blame somewhere. We want to figure out why they're struggling. We want to place the blame somewhere, and we don't want it to be on us, right? And that's just human nature. It's easy to think, well, if something was happening different at home, it would be better at school. You know, parents might be thinking, well, if this teacher wasn't targeting my child, they wouldn't be getting in trouble. And it's really easy to work against each other instead of, you know, just looking at the reality is this child's just struggling. What can we do as a team that respects each other to help them?
Right.
I think that is so important, because from the parent point of view, parents do that too. They'll say, well, don't get that teacher. That teacher did this, this, or this, or this, which is unfair, but it happens. And remember distinctly when you're, I keep hearing from all these other parents to choose this one teacher. They were so good. And so we did. And that teacher was so overwhelmed because so many parents had chosen her And it was kids like mine that did have a lot of struggles. So we were so desperate for extra help, but it sabotaged the whole classroom because they had an imbalance of kids that needed extra help. And then, you know, it was just all these miscommunications yes. because of that. And I just think, boy, if we had all just come together and looked at it individually, you know, and sat down for the child on the team, you know, all these expectations that didn't need to be there and all these voices mm-hmm. that, you know, weren't really looking at the reality in the big picture. It was a really tough year. And I really, looking back, take responsibility for what I could have done differently than just listening to others and throwing a lot on the teacher's plate that was unrealistic, you know, for her to handle.
I agree. There have been times in my children's careers, especially my daughter, who needed the most help. It was really difficult to figure out how to communicate. And of course, from the parent perspective, there's a couple of dynamics that happened in our family. And one was a little bit of shame that went with that fear, right? Shame for asking for extra help, because you know the teacher is got so many students and so many things happening, and yet you see your child struggling, and maybe some mishandling of making ourselves understood and then understanding the teacher. And then my husband was particularly good at saying to me, well, the teachers are the experts, so we should just let them do their job. So he was wanting me not to even try to engage in those ways. And I was like, yes, except we know her best, right? Like, we live with her. And so, you know, it's almost unfair not to tell the teacher what you know at this point, you know, about your child, because you're going to give them clues that maybe will avoid those pitfalls. And maybe not. I mean, you know, you get to see the children warts and all throughout the year. Both of those things were hard. It was hard for me not to just rush in too much. And it was hard for him because it's like, well, they know what they're doing. It's like, well, yes, they do. I don't know how you feel about all of that.
I love it. That was one thing I was going to kind of bring up, is that from a teacher's perspective, it's very helpful to have as much additional information as possible. And, you know, we are seeing two completely different sides of a student. And so, like, what you're describing is just very collaborative. So I think often, you know, our human nature wants to say, like, somebody's right and somebody's wrong. And sometimes it's just, we see two different kids because of the very different environments they're in, you know, mm-hmm. one that is the structured academic setting, and then one, which is your home, which even if you have a very structured home, is still a lot more choice, a lot more freedom and more comfort, you know, because right. you're home. And so when you can come to the table and not feel like you have to, like, push what you're seeing over, you know, that your perspective is more accurate, but when we can just, like, look at the child from both ends, then we really see a more well-rounded version of that child. So being collaborative like that, I think we can definitely come up with better solutions for the student. And what's challenging, and this would definitely fall underneath obstacles, is just time. I think that's a very big obstacle
yes.
for teachers. And I'm sure it is for parents too, is just being able to find that time. You know, we're with students all day and there's not much time when they're not with us. So then it's going to fall, like, to after school hours, and to be able to find time to have those big conversations can definitely be an obstacle.
And I think those conversations are critical. I really appreciate that you bring up the time factor, because one of the things that I encourage teachers and educators to do is to be flexible for parents, because we have parents that are working two jobs. We have parents that don't maybe have transportation. We have parents that have barriers in communication. They have their own obstacles. And so I'm always wanting teachers to be flexible, but this really makes me pause and think, and parents can also be flexible with teachers in their understanding that they have limited time, they have barriers, they may have transportation or other concerns, or children at home that they need to get. So all of that, you know, that this whole collaboration piece and putting the defensive walls down and really understanding what's in the teacher's way, what's in the parent's way. I love the idea that we're all coming together for the kid, but how can we be flexible with each other in that?
When you've established a good relationship, then that becomes easier because you're able to just say, hey, we've got to get together and talk about this. Like, what works for you and how can I accommodate it? And you have to have that relationship piece established so there's trust. And then I think both parties are able to be more flexible, you know, mm-hmm. because they understand we're coming to this as a team. We're going to be problem solving. We're not coming together to like complain or point fingers. We both need help and we can help each other.
No, and I was thinking about, you know, a lot of times teachers are givers. I mean, that's why you became a teacher. A lot of times teachers would ask me as a parent at the beginning of the year, you know, like what was the best way to communicate with me or those kinds of questions. And they were good. What I really loved, though, was when they would tell me what their parameters were. It's like, okay, I will respond better if you email this or if you text it, you know, between this time and this time or whatever it is. And even if we didn't have the relationship yet, the clarity about that was, as Brené Brown would say, was kind, right? So now I could say to myself, okay, I have this thing I want to tell the teacher, but I know that the only time to, you know, really communicate with her, you know, is during her planning time or during this like 15 minute period or whatever it is that she's said. And, you know, and tried to honor that, you know, and not just bombard in some other kinds of ways. So I think both sides of that, to just come forward as the parent and the teacher and say, this is, you know, the best way to communicate.
That's a really neat idea. And like for parents that are listening, I mean, even myself now, I might take this and steal it as a parent. I think that's a really neat thing that you can do because when you come to open house, like you as a parent, you're filling out those forms about ways to get in touch and the teacher's interested in that. You know, they're not going to like provide a form with their preference necessarily. It wouldn't be authentic, but to send a note as a parent that says, hey, throughout the school year, if I need to let you know something, I want to be really respectful of your time and preferences. Like, can you jot down, you know, how you're most comfortable communicating it and the hours that you're comfortable doing it? I can't imagine like if a student came in and brought a note like that from a parent, just how valued I would feel. So I love that idea. I may send that to my children's teachers this year.
Yeah. That's a way to start building that relationship, right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Any other ideas on like obstacles or how you've overcome some of these obstacles?
Sure. Yes. You know, kind of tying into what you were just saying with that last question, one of the biggest things that I have found, because like, I guess I should back up a minute, in my classroom, in the program that I teach, parent involvement is a requirement. At least before they start our program, we have to have a meeting together because I want them to understand the concept and how it will look for their child while they're with me, because the students come to me, it's more of a short-term process. And I also want them to know like my philosophy. I want them to know like how I'm going to love their child and how I want to work with them. And we have to be able to connect to do that. But because of that, I have to be very flexible to make sure that I can meet my parents where they're at. And it's become, honestly, one of my favorite parts of my job is working with the parents that I serve, because it's amazing like how much you learn when you can be so closely connected to your students' parents. So, you know, I do require that initial meeting, but I'll say, you know, what's the best way for us to do this? Mm-hmm. A lot of our parents might not have transportation. So we, as a school, I think we've done a good job really wrapping all of our arms around our families. So it's not just my parent, it's our parent. So it might be our school social worker or our principals will go pick the parent up and offer them a ride to the school so they can see the classroom and meet me. You know, if they're home with little ones and it's really hard for them to leave, I'll just go and visit them at home. If they're working and can't get off, we've met with parents, you know, on their lunch breaks because that's what was easiest mm-hmm. for them. Mm-hmm. Wow. You know, we have to make those accommodations and not just expect, you know, our parents to do all of the heavy lifting when it comes right. to making those connections and building that relationship. You know, the other thing that I've done, and a lot of teachers at our building will do this, and I know not all teachers are comfortable with this, but I give my parents my cell phone number and they can text me at any time. I will usually tell them, if you're trusting me with your child, I can trust you with my phone number. If you work late and you have an important question or something has happened that you know I need to know before the school day, just text me. My phone is muted at night. So if I'm asleep, you won't bother me. I'll get it as soon as I wake up. If it's after dinner, my personal preference is I would rather have that connection and that open communication with my parents than not. And the boundary is if I'm asleep, I'm just going to see it in the morning.
Yeah. If you're busy, you're not going to respond. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And I make sure that they understand that too. And I've never had a parent abuse that. I've only had wonderful experiences through it. And, you know, the families will text me, let me know if something has happened or, you know, if there's some reason I need to be handled with a bit of extra care that day. It has helped me so much as a teacher. And I feel like it's really helped my parents. It's a more comfortable way to communicate. And I think it just makes our connection more real.
And there are programs and apps and things out there that teachers and parents can communicate through that don't necessarily have to involve a personal cell phone number. But it's that whole message that you can reach me after hours, or we can be in contact. I am letting you know that I want to talk with you. I need to talk with you. And I want you to feel that in return, you know?
Yes. And we're a team, we're partners, you know? Yes. So it's been really neat. And I've ended up just having some of the best friendships with some of the parents. When I talk to my parents, I tell them, I love your son. Mm-hmm. He makes me smile every day. I just love him. Right. You know, I love your daughter. And it's genuine, you know, just like our kids, our parents can tell if it's not genuine, but I do love their kids. And so I want to make sure that they know it. And, you know, they can tell because I know a lot about them, you know, or I'll say, oh, they told me you guys went here last weekend. That sounded so much fun. You know, I think it's just really good for our parents to see that they're not just students to us and they're not just learners, but we see them for like the little people that they are.
And one of the other things that I know that you do, because I've heard you talk about it, you know, we use the word parents, but we're talking about anyone that is in that child's life. It could be a grandparent or a foster parent or an aunt or someone taking care of that child that isn't a parent, and you're involving whoever is that child's, you know, buffer, that safe relationship, that
caregiver. Absolutely.
I know that about you as well. You're looking at the whole child. You're looking at the family. You're looking at who that child interacts with for their best. That's critical, you know. So I would love that to be the case in, you know, every situation. Well,
and I have a question about your program. Since your program is sort of a temporary place for the students, have you noticed a change in those families and caregivers' behaviors and interactions with the school when the students do go back to their other assigned classes?
Yes, absolutely. And I can't take full credit because I feel like as an entire staff, we do a really great job loving our families. So we have really involved families, and I do feel like, you know, they feel comfortable and safe and they love their teachers. But when they've worked with me through my program, we usually will establish a pretty close connection. So it does just give them one more person. And sometimes, you know, they'll reach out to me because we've been like texting so much while their students have worked through my program. They might, you know, reach out to me to pass on information sometimes, like to the office, you know, because it's a comfortable way. They'll be like, hey, they're going to be late today. Can you let the secretary know? And so it just gives them, I think, more options to be able to pass information along to who they're comfortable doing it. And it's just one more layer, which is very similar with our students. It's just one more layer of support. You know, one more person in the building that just sort of has their back. That's what I hope our parents feel too.
I'll never forget sitting in an IEP meeting with one of my kids, and boy, those can be emotional and vulnerable on the parent part and probably vulnerable on the teacher part. Now I'm thinking, boy, I really need to do more of like trying to, you know, look through their eyes as well. So I love that we're having this conversation. But I remember feeling very vulnerable because a lot of things were being thrown at me that I didn't understand, acronyms and educational jargon. And it took me a lot of years and four kids to really learn, understand, and be emotionally strong enough to ask questions. And so that's one thing that has stuck with me that I feel like is something that we can all improve on, you know, is that education speak and coming together on the same level. You know, I think sometimes at least I felt like I was on the outside and didn't belong, or that wasn't knowledgeable enough to understand all the things that were being talked about, you know, that went really truly over my head at the time.
It is. And I think that's a really good thing for us as educators to reflect on, because I've been in meetings like that before too, and kind of advocating for the parent that was next to me, you know, thinking they might need some of this rephrased, because a lot of this is shop talk, right? It's like the acronyms that we're using in education. And, you know, when you have so many people sitting around that table and you're on a timeline and you have this, you know, large IEP to go through and they're typing things in the system, it's very easy to just refer back to the lingo that, you know, most of the people at the table are going to understand and can complete the paperwork and complete the process. And as a teacher, it's really good to reflect that, you know, this is this child's parent, like this is a big deal. And we want to make sure that not only do they feel comfortable and, you know, not embarrassed that they're feeling out of the loop or feel like they have to ask for clarification on everything, but, you know, also that they know what's being said and know what's happening so that they know that their child's getting the best care, because they're at the table, they're there to be an advocate and make sure that, you know, the things that their student needs to be successful are in place. They need to be able to understand what we're talking about. I don't know that that's ever like intentional, but it's definitely something to be intentional about, making sure that everybody at the table is, you know, feeling like they're in the know.
It's a little scary to even get brave enough to ask the question, what does that mean?
And it's scary for teachers too. You know, a lot of times when we're having those hard conversations about areas that a child is struggling in, it is scary to, you know, be having to break some of that news to parents who, you know, like you mentioned, Ginger, those are very emotional conversations. So I think everybody at the table is coming kind of vulnerable and, you know, just thinking how we can best make each other feel comfortable and safe while we're having those hard conversations so that everybody can walk away feeling more encouraged. Because the whole goal of those meetings is to help.
And to your point, I was in as many IEP meetings where a teacher or in some cases, the vice principal was almost in tears because I knew they cared about my child and she was struggling. There were some times that their tears were welcome and there are other times that I was a little resistant to that whole idea. But that also depended on the relationship. And one of the things that Jessica has said about how she makes sure the parents know that she loves their child and that she knows things about their child, that's hugely important too, because a lot of times in those meetings, you know, because they need to be short, there is such a time constraint. Usually it's like, we're going to get down to what is wrong, you know, instead of what is right. So hearing what is wrong, it puts everybody in that kind of mood, right? Well, you know, we might be hopeless here because there's a laundry list of things that are wrong instead of, oh, here's all the wonderful things that this student is doing and is done. And that's kind of a tip from both parent and teacher standpoint. You know, Jessica said that teachers should always do that to parents, but parents should reflect the positive that they see in their child too. Cause I know there's a lot of times that the teachers would see me coming to talk and think, oh, she's going to come in with some other problem or some other challenge, you know, and if we had some major successes and wins, it was good to share that. You know, if something happened that I saw at home that I hadn't seen before, you know, I wanted to make sure that the teacher knew too, because it was a shared success, right?
I bet you maybe even were able to share, and this is how we got there, and maybe it could be reflected in the classroom.
Yeah, I mean, either way, right?
Right, exactly.
Well, and we often, as teachers, we know that we want to give positive phone calls home as often as possible. When the child, you know, has been doing things well, we want to call you and give you that positive feedback. And I think that's a great point that, you know, teachers would love to have that too. Mm-hmm. If you have been working on a certain goal, kind of as a parent teacher team, and you notice some improvement at home, sending a note or a text or calling and saying, like, I just wanted to let you know, like, they did it. This is the improvement. Yeah. And giving that positive feedback to the teacher is just as beneficial as when we call home with positive things.
What would you coach newer teachers, teachers that don't have as much experience as you do, Jess, in all of this? Like if I'm in my first or second year of teaching, what would you tell me about parent-teacher relationships?
I think I would say the first thing that you have to do right off the bat is really work hard on communicating. You know, it can get you started off the wrong foot if parents don't know your schedule, they don't know your procedures, they don't know your expectations, if you're not sending a newsletter or, you know, finding some way to communicate with families, then they feel out of the loop and have to sort of like contrive things on their own. So to start off right off the bat, it's just really strong communication with all students, parents and families, caregivers would be what I would suggest to a new teacher, because those first few years, you're very overwhelmed and very busy and something sometimes has to go. That's just not the thing that should go. So starting with communication right off the bat, and then, you know, really trying to make sure that your parents know you love their children and you love them and you are grateful to work with them. I think transparency is very important. You know, being able to just explain, you know, things you're seeing and things you're trying to do. And transparency from parents is very helpful too. As much information as you're willing to share helps the teacher be able to handle situations better. And ask questions. You know, I think, and this would be for both parties, you know, if your child comes home and you're a parent and something they say just doesn't seem right, instead of making an assumption about what that teacher was doing, just reach out in a respectful way and just ask the question, hey, this is what they came home and said happened today. Can you help me understand? I want to make sure I'm supporting you and I'm helping them in the best way, you know, but I don't know that I'm getting the whole picture. And just ask questions and give your child's teacher a chance to explain things and vice versa.
Well, that's a great piece of advice for both sides of this relationship, because a lot of times our children are not, they don't see the big picture of what the teacher meant, you know, then they misunderstood, or the parent. And so the story might get a little convoluted, right?
One thing I was thinking of with like this idea of relationships, we have a child and they're kind of going two different places, right? They have home and they have school. And it kind of reminds me of a child who might have two homes. They might go to mom's home and they might go to dad's home. And there are different dynamics you have, you know, with separated parents. Mm-hmm. And when you have a family structure where separated parents, you know, mistrust each other and badmouth each other and, you know, don't agree and argue in front of the child, that child has a hard time like having a really strong sense of felt safety at either place, or trust, or feel like guilt for having fun in one home, but, you know, shouldn't. And it's very confusing and it's hard for the child to have that, you know, strong attachment. But if you have a divided family that the parents are co-parenting very, very well, and they are supporting each other and praising each other, that child can feel like they have two very safe, loving places to be. And that would be my goal with like a parent, a teacher relationship, is that if we are mutually, you know, supporting each other in a strong relationship, that child feels like a strong sense of felt safety when they're at school, and they can create a secure attachment there and at home. Whereas if the school and the home have like a break in that relationship and it's not repaired, we've got these little guys coming to us every day, not feeling like they can trust their teacher, right? Or not feeling like they can, you know, feel safe at school, because when they're at home, they're hearing bad things about their teacher and bad things about the school. So when we work really hard to create this strong relationship, that child can feel like they have two places with a strong sense of felt safety that they can have a secure attachment.
So now I have a question. If I'm a parent and I am feeling disenfranchised by the school, if I'm feeling like maybe there is something I have to complain about, you know, whether it's the teacher themselves or something else that's happened, help me through that. What am I supposed to do? What's the best first step for me?
I think it would be very dependent on the type of relationship you already have established with the teacher. You know, if you've had a pretty strong relationship, or, you know, and then something has come up, you may feel comfortable just saying, hey, can we get together and meet about this? But if that's not been the case, it might need to be a bigger conversation so that there's somebody who can help mediate as well. Hopefully, you know, every parent and every caregiver is in a different circumstance. If they're brand new to the school, this would be hard, but hopefully there would be somebody in that building that they have a connection with, you know, a safe person for that parent to go to and say, can you help me have this conversation? You know, and then I would just suggest you get together in person and, you know, start with some of those positives. Like you mentioned, Julie, start with the things we've seen that are good, that are pleasing, that we're proud of, and then move on to the piece that is the struggle. But I do think like involving a third party would be helpful. It really is in line with, you know, what we know about restorative justice and restorative practices, being able to have a conversation. If something has happened that has, you know, created a break in this relationship, it might need to be that a repair needs to be made. And so having that additional party can help, you know, walk through that. It's hard to know without like a specific scenario, but I think the restorative practices would be a great solution for that. Just being able to come together, knowing that the goal is we want to work together.
Right.
We want to have this relationship. So we're not coming to place blame. We're coming to the table to make a repair so that we can continue to move on as a team. But you'd have to have that intention set before starting.
It's so good. What I find remarkable about what you're doing is shifting that view of traditional discipline. And we at ATN are totally on board with that. And I think what you're doing is very innovative and it's spreading. We know that other schools are looking at brain-based discipline now, as opposed to, you know, punitive based. I wonder if you just want to have any last thoughts or words regarding that and how we can actually cross over into the home with that as well.
I think that when we look at brain-based discipline, when we look at, you know, handling behaviors in different ways in a more restorative way, it already naturally crosses over to home because, again, like our families are seeing that the intent behind what we're doing is teaching and it's love. We're not trying to punish. We're not trying to hurt the students, you know, with the biggest consequence we can think of. Dr. Lori De Sotelo says this, and I've seen other places too, but like discipline comes from the root word for like disciple, right? Yeah. So it's about learning and teaching. Like when I have those meetings with my parents, I explain that and, you know, coming at discipline from this perspective, I think just naturally gravitates into the home because they see that the goal is teaching and the goal is just supporting their child while they improve. And then what's really neat is as you create these really close connections with families, sometimes like my students, caregivers will reach out and be like, how can I do this at home? You know, do you have some tips for what to do at home? And I can, you know, suggest some things that work at school. Or the mom side of me could say, well, you know what? My kids do the same thing. And, you know, that makes everybody feel good because there's no judgment. You know, we're parents and we're figuring this all out together. So a lot of times they'll try to use some of the same vocabulary that we're using. Or if we use mantras at school, they'll use the mantras at home so that it can be more consistent for the child. And then it helps everybody. We have had moms that have come in and asked for help to make calm corners in their home and teach their child the calm corner. And they're sending us pictures like, look, she's using the calm corner here, you know, in our apartment. So I just think that's so neat because when you're using a more brain-based discipline, you are working with that whole child. So it should happen at school and at home.
Wow, Jessica. So promise us that you'll come back some other time and we can talk some more.
Yes.
We will see you, I'm sure, at our upcoming conference, you know, next year. You're always such an important person there. And you are actually keynoting at an upcoming conference in Wisconsin, which I just think is very impressive and well-deserved. So we look forward to hearing about that. So you're doing great work and we are honored to know you.
Thank you so much.
Well, Jessica, have a great school year. To all the other teachers out there who are listening, have a great school year. Parents as well. I hope that you all got an idea, a golden nugget or two that you can think about as you're starting your relationship with your new teachers or new parents, depending on which side of that relationship you're on. And we'll catch you next time.
This has been another episode of Regulated and Relational. Next episode, Anna Paravano and Jen Alexander will be Julian Ginger's guests to discuss how to create a regulating classroom environment. You won't want to miss that. A special thanks to Lorraine Schneider, our editor, and Joe Kramer for donating our music. For more information about the Attachment and Trauma Network, visit our website at attachtrauma.org. Show notes and upcoming episodes will be available on our website and through anchor.fm. I'm Danny Pankratz. Thanks for listening.